Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call this committee meeting to order. House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development this fine day, Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. Nice to have people in our audience today. We do have a full schedule. I think we'll begin and move on very quickly here. The first two things on our agenda are a couple of work sessions that should just take a few moments. I will open the work session on House Bill 2389 first, Fallen Hero Roadside Memorial Signs. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This measure changes the process by which an individual may receive recognition with a Fallen Hero Roadside Memorial Sign. We heard it on February 18th. Since that time, we've received a statement of minimal fiscal impact. We have a statement of no revenue impact. This measure has no amendments and would go straight to the floor, Madam Chair.
Would you like a motion?
Colleagues, yes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2389 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Davis moves House Bill 2389 to the floor with a due pass recommendations. Concerns, comments, questions? I see none. And we will move this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2658. This involves Gold Star vehicle registration plates. Mr. Brennan, would you like to explain this bill?
Oh, yes, Madam Chair. We heard it also on February 18th. It permits the Department of Transportation to issue veterans recognition vehicle plates to Gold Star family members who are siblings of persons killed in action. This measure, we had it during our hearing. We discussed the possibility of adding an emergency clause. That is the Dash 1 amendment, which is attached to your packet and available on OLIS. The Dash 1 adds an emergency clause. The measure become effective October of 2015. With the Dash 1 amendment, Madam Chair, the measure has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact. Again, this would be going straight to the floor. There's no subsequent bill, Madam Chair.
Has everyone had a chance to see the Dash 1 amendment? Vice Chair Davis?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2658.
It's been moved that we move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2658. Any objections? Seeing none, that motion passes. Vice Chair Davis?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2658 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Davis has recommended that we move House Bill 2658 with the Dash 1 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? None noted. That motion passes. Committee members, would you mind if we suggest that Representative Olson carry these bills to the floor?
Very good idea.
I'm all right with that. And we will be asking him if he would be pleased to do that. Thank you. And we will move on to our public hearings. We're going to go in a little bit different order than we have, I believe, on our agenda. We have some legislators who will be coming and going. So we're going to start with House Bill 2837. So we'll open a hearing on House Bill 2837. Mr. Brennan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2837 directs the Department of Transportation to issue a certificate of exemption from the requirement to use a child safety system, safety belt, or safety harness if a nurse practitioner or physician assistant submits a statement on behalf of the person requesting the exemption. No revenue impact, but we have not received fiscal impact statement on this, and there's no amendment, Madam Chair.
All right, and I have five people who have signed up to testify. Representative Gomberg, would you like to join us first? And would you like to have people come up with you, or do you want to start us off all by yourself? Ms. Basler? Ms. Portwood, thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast, or as we often refer to it in my office, the gateway to District 9.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg.
Members of the committee, House Bill 2837 would allow a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant to sign a safety belt exemption request, which is documentation that goes to ODOT. ODOT can then issue a safety belt exemption certificate to a patient who can't wear a seat belt due to physical condition, medical problem, or body size. These exemptions are rare, as they should be. But as you will hear, they are very necessary in certain circumstances. Currently, Oregon law allows only a physician to sign this form, which can result in a delay or hassle or increased cost and hardships to Oregonians that might normally see a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant for their health care needs. I brought forward this this proposed legislation in response to a situation that you'll hear about shortly from my constituent, Ms. Porterwood. My district, like many of yours, is fairly rural, and in many communities like mine, a patient could face a long journey, not to mention a significant wait or increased financial cost to see a physician who is not normally their health care provider. So at this point, I will turn the microphone over to my friends here at the podium, and I know that you'll give them all the courtesy and consideration that you shall.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Basler, thank you for being here today.
Chair McEwen and members of the committee, Sarah Basler for the Oregon Nurses Association, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2837, which, as you've just heard, removes what we believe to be an arbitrary barrier to nurse practitioner practice in Oregon. In addition to representing Oregon nurses, the Oregon Nurses Association works with a group of several hundred nurse practitioners around the state who are members of Nurse Practitioners of Oregon, which is a professional association for nurse practitioners here. This bill makes a very simple change to Oregon statute and would allow NPs and physician assistants to sign safety belt exemption requests. This change increases continuity of care for patients who need these exemptions and would decrease hassle and costs for both patients and providers. And you'll hear in a moment from Meg Portwood about how this issue has impacted one of her patients and her practice. By way of background, I wanted to remind the committee that Oregon nurse practitioners have earned a broad scope of practice. They practice independently without supervision from a physician and provide comprehensive care to their patients. In addition to providing preventive health services, Oregon nurse practitioners diagnose and treat patients and prescribe and dispense medications. As you know, Oregon has a well-documented primary care provider shortage, and in many communities around the state, it might be a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant who is the only primary care provider around. Over the past several decades, there have been numerous studies about the outcomes of patients treated by nurse practitioners. Those studies have consistently shown that nurse practitioners deliver high-quality services, high-quality health care to their patients. The recent Institute of Medicine report on the future of nursing analyzed some of this data around nurse practitioner outcomes and made a very strong and clear recommendation that barriers to nurse practitioner practice be removed. ONA's support of House Bill 2837 is because this bill does remove one of those arbitrary barriers to practice, improves continuity of care for patients as well as access. So thank you very much for your consideration. We urge your support of House Bill 2837, and I'll turn it over to Meg Portwood.
Great. Thank you so much. Welcome, Ms. Portwood.
Thank you, Representative McEwen, Chair, and members. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I've been in Lincoln City since 1976. I am a sole provider, and we have a rural health clinic providing primary care. We see approximately 4,500 patients a year. We are a PCPCH. I'm top tier, and boy, do we work hard to keep that designation, but it means that we are PCP, primary care providers, for our patients. And one of my fellows has a nasopharyngeal cancer and was diagnosed last spring and has been referred to Corvallis to see oncology for radiation and chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And his cancer surgery, you know, was on the tongue and inside of his mouth. And the radiation is aimed at his neck and face. And the process of treatment has been just miserable. We almost had him on hospice last summer. He was having to make repeated trips to Corvallis. He could not drive, so transportation had to be arranged for him. Sometimes he was able to stay in Corvallis at the Pestania House, but oftentimes preferred to come back and forth. The oncologist noticed how red and irritated his neck was, and after the guy lost 80 pounds, he had to have a feeding tube inserted in his abdomen. Therefore, you know, 80-pound weight loss, not able to drink fluids, not able to eat, miserable, constant pain. He came in and said, you know, my oncologist said that I could get an exemption not to wear a safety belt, which went on this side right over his chemo or his radiation site and over his G-tube feeding tube. And so I said, well, sure, you know, I think that's appropriate. And oncology recommended it. I concurred and I signed the form. And then I got a letter back from ODOT saying, I'm not allowed to sign that piece of paper. You okay? And so now what do we do next? Because he really needed that care. And at that time, again, he was almost on hospice care because he was so ill, and he had to make an appointment to see a physician. The guy had never seen him before, didn't know his history. He had to make the appointment, had to see him, and the physician looked at him and said, "Why are you wasting our time? Of course you need this." He signed the form and sent him on his merry way, yet the guy had to pay the, you know, appointment too. But it was just very uncomfortable and miserable for the patient, for the family, and you know, I felt like I was stupid because, I mean, why can't I sign this form? I write prescriptions, I do minor procedures, I sew up lacerations, I put on casts, I used to deliver babies. You know, we see patients in the hospital, so it seems like an administrative burden, and I'm really hopeful. You know, this is one case in the last 25 years, the third case since 1976 that I've been faced with this. It's not a very common incident, and I absolutely support seatbelt use. You know, I talk about that in all my well child visits, well teen visits, sports physicals, adult physicals. So, you know, I do support that process, but we have to have an exemption when it's indicated. So I really appreciate your listening and hope for your support.
Well, thank you for bringing this forward through Representative Gomberg. And
thank you.
Any questions for this panel from the committee? Yes, Ms. Representative McLean.
It's not really a question. I just want to support you. I had a mother that I was taking to the doctors that had a feeding tube, and I also had a husband who had chemotherapy treatments. And so in both of those cases, there are days, you know, I mean, there are times where these exceptions make sense. And we were lucky enough to have transport, so I didn't always have to do my mom with a feeding tube for the time that she had it. But I think we have to be practical. And if we're having doctors who understand the risk of having somebody in a car without a seatbelt, then that means that there's more risk, you know, of more problems for the individual if they don't get this exemption. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative McLean. Yes, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in our discussion, when you came by my office, the issue was the scope of practice for nurse practitioners. I was just glancing at the statute, and I was just curious where this particular activity fit in that broader scope, which I think you might have mentioned earlier, but how does it fit in that area within which you're all licensed to practice? And I'm a little bit at a loss to know how a seatbelt and its impact upon a person is then viewed in light of your scope of practice.
Chair McEwen, Representative Bentz, I would answer that question by saying that the nurse practitioner scope of practice is very broad. Nurse practitioners are authorized to provide comprehensive primary care to their patients. This would be addressing one of their specific health care needs.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
Is there anybody that would object to this or view it as something that's outside what they perceived to be the scope as allowed under statute?
Chair McEwen, Representative Bentz, we're aware of no opposition to this bill.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. We'll excuse this panel. We have two other people who've signed up to speak. So we'll call up Amy Joyce from the Oregon Department of Transportation and Elizabeth Remley, please. Thank you for being here today.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Remley, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. The physician assistants, for those of you who don't know, because this is not a healthcare committee, are providers that operate in a similar echelon of healthcare services to a nurse practitioner. They are primary care providers. They sometimes they are the only provider in a community. Sometimes they own their own clinic. And so for a patient who needs to have a seatbelt exemption, sometimes the physician assistant is the closest provider to sign that. And it's also a lot of times the physician assistant is the one who knows the patient better than any other provider who would be able to sign this piece of paper. We are grateful to the Nurses Association for working on this issue and bringing it to our attention. We're grateful that they included us in this bill. Just 2 weeks ago, a physician assistant in Coos Bay received a letter back from ODOT saying they couldn't sign this for their patient who has a defibrillator and a pacemaker and can't put a seatbelt on over their chest. So this is something that's urgent. and it's happening on a regular basis and needs to be addressed. So thanks for your time, and I have to run to another committee.
Thank you.
So
thank you for being here. You're excused. Ms. Joyce, welcome.
Thank you, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation today representing our safety division, our transportation safety division. Any opportunity we can talk about the importance of safety belts, I'm going to be in here talking about it. But this bill really is a recognition of the changed face of the healthcare landscape. And so the statute says physician, and that is what ODOT enforces is the law, but this bill recognizes that the landscape in healthcare has changed. So, but just to note that wearing a seatbelt is incredibly important. The statistics on death in a motor vehicle crash from not wearing a seatbelt are astronomical. Oregon has one of the highest seatbelt rates of use in the United States, and yet those who are killed on our highways, 20 to 25%, sometimes 30% of them, are unbelted. It's a highly risky behavior, and so, as with physicians, the anticipation is that this exemption will be extremely rare and granted only when necessary, and we know that that's what's going to happen when this bill is passed.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Joyce? Yes, Dr. Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Amy, very much for your testimony. First, what is the rate of seatbelt usage in Oregon? Do you know?
Chair McEwen and Representative Davis, it fluctuates a little bit year to year. The most recent stats, just in from 2014, 97.75% of Oregonians use their seatbelt.
Follow up?
Yes.
And what is the procedure for once you get an exemption? Is it a sticker on the driver's license? Is it a piece of paper you got to keep in your car? What's the exemption actually look like in practice?
Chair McEwen and Representative Davis, I have one with me. I'll pull it out. It's a laminated card that one would show to a law enforcement officer to demonstrate that the exemption's been granted.
Ms. Joyce, does one have to go to the DMV to acquire this, or is this handed out at the doctor's office or at the pleasure of the nurse practitioner that is making that judgment call?
Chair McEwen, the process actually happens through our Transportation Safety Division. So the form is completed by the customer and the physician, or under the bill, the other medical providers, and is submitted to ODOT. The Safety Division reviews it, ensures that the person is a licensed physician in this case, and that some of the features are, the form is filled out correctly. There is an aspect, I will tell you, of sometimes with working with the customer to ensure that there isn't another way to get at the proper placement of a safety belt. So submission of the form is not an automatic check the box and send out the form. Our folks work with people to see if there is a way to get them to use a seatbelt properly through adjustment or whatever. And if that can't be done and it's appropriate, issue the card.
And then the card comes in the mail?
I believe so.
How is the card distributed?
Chair McEwen, I believe it's sent through the mail.
Okay. Any further questions for this panel?
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to step up and speak to House Bill 2837? All right. On that note, we will close this hearing. And we will move along to House Bill 2979. I see Representative Kenny Geyer has joined us. So we will open a hearing on 2979. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chairs, esteemed members of the committee. I'm Melissa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, here in support of 2979. Transit is a lifeline to opportunity for young people, especially in my district. Young people in communities like Lentz, Foster Powell, Mount Scott Arleta, Hazelwood, Palhurst, Gilbert, and Montevilla all depend on public transit to get around, not only to schools, but also to after-school activities and to jobs after school and on weekends. The Betsy, as you may know, used to provide about $20 million per biennium for both youth passes as well as public transportation service, and that ended with the Betsy program. So this bill asked for $20 million symbolically to show this is the kind of commitment that the state used to put into this area. We recognize that's a tall order. Don't expect that much, but that was there for symbolic purposes. My district includes Portland Public Schools, which with the support from the City of Portland, Portland and TriMet has been able to maintain its Youth Pass program since the Betsy was eliminated, but it's been an annual struggle and may not be sustainable. My district also includes David Douglas, which is the eastern part of Portland. And like other parts of East Portland and East Multnomah County, the service levels aren't good enough to allow kids to have bus passes in order to get to school. HB 2979 would allow those school districts to work with the city and TriMet to increase service levels and provide subsidized transit passes to youth. In addition, high schools and transit districts all around the state could use youth passes. I know that others of you here have similar challenges in your own neighborhoods. Many communities have small transit districts that could benefit from a youth pass program. There's a clear correlation between increased transportation access and educational outcomes, including increased on-time attendance and performance, as well as increased access to extracurricular activities, which is just as important for future success. Many families in my district are struggling to make ends meet and can't afford the cost of transit to take care of everyday needs. Increasingly, young people from families in my district are working to contribute to family income, and HB 2979 would increase access to job opportunities for many young people in the district. My district also encompasses the area around the Jade District along 82nd Avenue in East Portland, which according to DEQ has the highest levels of air toxics from on-road mobile emissions. Increasing transit service and ridership in and around this area will directly reduce driving and increase air quality and health outcomes for residents. Transit agencies across the state are struggling to raise revenue for transit service. As the legislature is considering the importance of funding for senior and disabled populations that are vulnerable and depend on public transportation, which I strongly support, we also need to include youth in the discussion. Young people are transit dependent by definition, and we need to ensure that they have access that they need to prosper. HB 2979 will help create the next generation of transit riders, the future consumers and leaders of our region that will help shape the future health of our communities. This is a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Yes, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question in regards to the payment for the busing. Most districts pay for their own busing for students. So does the district pay a portion of this?
Right now, what this bill calls for is for the state to help local jurisdictions. So it could be school districts, cities, county, transit agency. Some kind of local commitment has to be there in order to tap into a fund. So this would create a fund that would help create, that would help the youth passes, as well as increased service, because the increased service is a really important component to it. They would put in a portion. We're saying that they have to put in at least 10%. And then there would be criteria that would be set up that would say, what are the other, you know, if you're applying for the funds, being ready with a plan, showing skin in the game, 10%, they may want to put even more into it than that, are some of the criteria that would be set up under this plan.
And a follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got rural in my district, mm-hmm. and they don't have the option of having public transit. So will the 10% be compatible to what other districts would have to pay out of their budget for busing? So what I'm trying to get at is,
yeah,
will some districts benefit more from having this and have more dollars left available to them by utilizing these services versus other districts who have to actually pay for busing within their district?
I believe the chair is looking at doing a work group that will look at how this might be financed. Certainly there's districts all over the state that have small transit agencies that might want to make use of this. Not all of them. If it's really rural, that's not going to happen. It may happen in Baker City or Bend or the Medford area. I know that Eugene and Springfield has a transit district and is very actively pursuing this. Salem has had one. So there are going to be, I would say it's probably more relevant for small urban areas. But in terms of how the financing for this happens, I think it's a complicated formula, one that deserves careful scrutiny in terms of balancing needs across the state.
Thank you.
Yep.
I appreciate you, Representative. One moment, please. Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much for your testimony. I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to discuss the issue. As a transit user myself, I understand the behavioral aspect, that getting kids started early using transit is one of the opportunities for success in creating a lifetime opportunity to make it a behavioral, regular thing that people. In fact, one of my coworkers in Portland often says we should force all legislators and Oregonians to get on a bus at least once a year so that it be, so that they know what it's like.
Yeah.
And it can actually be used, and, and that transit could be should be something that we support. So I just want to think, I think there is a nexus between students, kids, and the transit system, and thanks for your help and continuing that discussion.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, I mean, I think part of it is opportune time because you're looking at a huge transportation package, and I know that there are certain districts that have put enormous amount of work, Eugene Springfield, Portland Public Schools, who have proposals in front of you. I am very supportive of all of those, and in addition to supporting, you know, individual efforts, I what I'm really encouraging here is that we take a statewide look at how do we come up with some criteria so that the state can be in partnership to really increase transit service for this population.
Right. So, thank you, Representative Kenny Geyer. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
On that note, yes, there are a number of bills coming to this session that deal with a number of different aspects of student transportation, and I am very interested in beginning to form a work group to try and answer all of the questions that have come out in the last 6 months or so around this issue. It seems to be a very hot topic in this session. The world's changing. There may be some things that we want to look at as a legislature around student transportation. So I think what you're seeing with this bill being introduced is the tip of the iceberg of a number of topics that are going to come up in the next few weeks that are going to be of interest to all of us who are interested in transportation, not only education, student transportation, and transportation as a whole regarding transit. So we have a number of other people who are signed up to speak to this bill. Ms. Hagerbaumer, please, and Eric Molina and Chris Rawl. Welcome to our committee. Very happy to have you here today.
Thank you, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. My name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I am the Deputy Director at the Oregon Environmental Council. And you have my written testimony, so I'll just make some high-level points here. One, to Representative Hack's question, the concept is certainly to come up with a program that is useful not only for the larger transit districts in the state, but also the smaller communities, the rural communities or towns that could potentially benefit from this. So first, we'll have people speak to the health impacts, to the broader transit impacts, and to the educational impacts of this bill. But the question you might be asking yourself is, why would an environmental organization be interested in this concept? And we believe that better access to youth transit will help reduce congestion. It's very interesting that travel surveys find that about 9% to 15% of peak period travel, this is United States-wide, relates to parents chauffeuring their kids. And I think those of you who know something about traffic engineering know that congestion on the highway, removing, it's not linear. So let's say you removed 5% of the traffic, you actually get a bigger result in reductions in congestion. So we see a really positive impact there with congestion. Also, if we can move some trips to transit and parents don't have to take their kids to school, which a lot of people drop off their kids at school. You might drop off your kids at school, and you see all those cars idling there by the schools. Well, idling is not good for air quality. It's not good for the kids' health. So we've got that benefit of better health impacts and also reduced air pollution and reduced carbon emissions associated both with less idling and with less congestion. And as you mentioned, Representative Davis, we're excited about that thought of kids using transit early in life because it really sets you up to be more interested in transit throughout your life. Some of you may have gotten visits from people last week when Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon had its lobby day, and I was talking to a young woman there who, this is not environmental at all, but she was describing how when she was a kid, when she took the yellow school bus, she was bullied a lot. And her parents started just driving her everywhere for the rest of her school career. And had transit been an option for her, that really could have potentially been very helpful. We have been reaching out to transit districts around the state to talk about this issue. And, we talked with Julie Brown, who is I think she presented to you a couple weeks ago, right? General manager of Rogue Valley Transit District. And she wanted to say that we could share that they definitely see where they could increase transit to meet youth needs in RVTD's district. And she also felt that whatever form the program takes, that it would be important that the allocations would be fair to different sizes of transit agencies. So she might be somebody who I think would be potentially interested in this work group. I will stop there and just hope that you would agree that there are really multiple benefits to this, to youth transit, so that if you put, there's like bigger bang for the buck than just one of the things that we're talking about. Great. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to our committee.
Hi, Representative McEwen, members of the committee. My name is Erica Molina. And thank you for the opportunity to come speak here where you all. I am 22 years old, and I'm a resident of Multnomah County and a Mount Hood Community College and Portland State alum. So, in fact, Representative Gorsuch was my professor my sophomore year of school. So
it's very true.
You're a lucky woman. Congratulations. Yes,
thank you.
I'm surprised you admit that in public.
And so today I'm here to testify in support of HB 2979. I grew up in Rockwood, a neighborhood in the city of Gresham, and I was fortunate enough to have had the support of family and friends to have successfully finished my college degree from MHCC and PSU. So through my school years, though, college years, I was transit dependent, and having access to public transportation was essential to my success as a young person. I attended Reynolds High School in East Multnomah County, and Reynolds High School doesn't offer a youth pass to high school students, and so there are many times when I miss the bus, and I miss the yellow bus, and so I would have to find my own way to school, and there was, at times, I didn't have enough money for a bus fare, so I would be forced to just stay at home and unfortunately not go to school, but that often meant that I would have to find my own way for extracurricular activities, like after school, and I think it was through my extracurricular activities that I learned what I wanted to do and study in college. And so it was being exposed to just various activities in high school, outside of school, that I decided to go on to school. And so having access to public transportation to get me to my activities was more than just going from point A to point B. It was really vital to figuring out who I even was as a young person, and especially as a first-generation college student. And so I currently work for the Multnomah Youth Commission right now, a body of up to 42 youth commissioners that represent youth all over Multnomah County. And they have been working to maintain Youth Pass, which provides free access or free bus passes to every high school student in the Portland area and the Portland Public Schools. However, through their advocacy, they realize that it's not just enough to get Youth Pass in Portland Public Schools, that neighborhoods in East Multnomah County need access to reliable and safe transit. We're in need of increased services in East Multnomah County, and we saw that need. TriMet claims that they don't have enough money to increase services in East Multnomah County. And so youth living there are often challenged when it comes to just getting around. And so so as a result of this, youth commissioners are working in partnership with OPAL, Environmental Justice Organization, and PSU Capstone to not only expand Youth Pass to all high schools in Multnomah County, but to also ensure that youth have access to safe and reliable and affordable transit service. Having access to safe, reliable, and affordable public transportation is essential to any young person's life. Having Youth Pass would have made my life so much easier and relieved a lot of the stress of figuring out how I would pay for a bus fare. And today, it's my little sisters, Laura and Leticia, who attend Reynolds High School as a freshman and sophomore. And so they need a Youth Pass, and so that they too can figure out, you know, what they want to do in life. And so in conclusion, so please support HB 2979, and thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. I would happy to answer any questions you all have. So,
thank you, Ms. Molina. Mm-hmm. Mr. Rall.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. Once again, I'm Chris Rall. I'm with Transportation for America. Transportation for America is an alliance of elected business and civic leaders from communities across the country united to ensure that states and the federal government step up to invest in smart, homegrown, locally driven transportation solutions, because these are the investments that hold the key to our future economic prosperity. T4A has launched a network called START, the State Transportation Advocacy Research and Training Network, which is there to connect advocates and legislators who are working to advance state transportation legislation to share resources and ideas for how to succeed. And one key element to success that we've seen as far as state transportation packages that have been moving around the nation is having broad-based coalitions. And in many ways, those are often built upon broad multimodal interests to gain widespread support for a transportation package. This Youth Transit Initiative, HB 2979, is a component of the proposed package developed by the Oregon Transportation Forum, which has broad support from virtually every transportation interest in the state. There's some concern about the cost, naturally, so I'd like to just bring some national perspective on state roles in funding public transit investment. My written testimony, which you should have, provides more detail, but the key finding in our analysis is that the state of Oregon supports only 3% of transit operations in the state. And so Oregon's ranked about 37th among states nationally by this metric. And to provide more context, states nationally provide 24% of transit operations funding, so proportionally 8 times what Oregon invests in transit operations. We've heard from transit districts that sustainable operations funding is the most critical component to provide better transit service. So in closing, T4A, Transportation for America, supports the Youth Transit Initiative, HB 2979, as a smart way to improve options for youth looking to access education and work opportunities. And we also have to give a nod to HB 2629 as a step in the right direction, which you'll hear about later.
Great.
In this hearing.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Yes, Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair. And Chris, thanks for being here today. I very much appreciate it. As to the point of sort of creating a habitual environment for kids to get to know how to use transit, do we have research out there, or has T4A seen any research about the impact of providing more access to transit for youth and the behaviors and the habits that creates? But do you know if any body of research out there about this?
I have not looked at that, so I can certainly get back to you after talking with our policy team, but I'm not sure what we have.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you for joining us today.
Great.
Next, I would like to call Belinda Ochoa and Jonathan, is it Oster? Thank you. And Tricia Smith. Welcome. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. In no particular order.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and I am here to offer our opposition to House Bill 2979 as it is currently written. OSEA represents, among its 20,000 members, a great deal of those members are school bus drivers. And so one of the topics that I get to be an expert on is student transportation as a result of that. I'm here to offer our opposition to particular points in this bill, not our opposition to increased transit ridership in East County or any other place in the state, for that matter. We have no opinion about transit ridership. It's not what we do. And so we'll leave that to your good thoughtfulness and the other proponents and opponents of such service. Our issue is with student transportation. In Oregon, we transport our students by mandate. There is a state mandate that says school districts must transport students to and from school, secondary students, which are the topic of this bill, if they live more than a mile and a half from their school. There are some waivers to that requirement. Cortland has one that actually preceded the requirement. Eugene has one. They are the two districts that have a waiver from that requirement. Other districts must transport their students. Also, the state reimburses, through the state school fund, school districts at 70, 80, or 90% of their actual and approved transportation costs for transporting these students that they're mandated to transport. For districts that have particular safety issues in their walk zone, that area closer than a mile and a half, David Douglas has some of these. If you've been in that district, you know there are places you just can't get to if you're walking. So David Douglas has a waiver that allows them to transport those students who live within the walk zone but cannot walk safely to school. Safety is the primary issue in student transportation at the national level as well as at the state level. We are transporting someone else's children. There is no higher value commodity that you can transport than someone else's children. And so the safety of those children needs to be paramount in that transportation. So the National Transportation Safety Board has adopted safety standards for school buses that are stricter than any other vehicle on the road. There is more steel, more safety elements in a school bus by far than in a transit bus. The sides of the bus won't collapse because of the steel in them and the way that they are constructed. The windows don't pop out as a transit bus windows do because of the way they're constructed. The seats are designed so that you'll notice school buses don't have seat belts because you can't put a 250-pound 18-year-old and a 30-pound 5-year-old in the same seat belt restraint system and have the same safety effect. So the NTSB has instead mandated a passive restraint system. That is the seats and the way the bus itself is constructed so that when a school bus is in an accident, the riders are forced down into the padded seat in front of them and then down to the ground. They don't fly around in the bus the way they do in a transit bus. School buses are much safer than transit buses, which is why schools are mandated to use them. School bus drivers are the most highly trained drivers on the road. They have to not only know how to drive a bus, but they have to know how to manage students. And they have to know what to do when there are management issues on the bus with those students. And unlike a transit bus that can stop and throw the student off, a school bus cannot. They must manage that situation and make sure that the students are handled safely and get to their stop that they belong on. There are safety issues that a school bus driver, can handle that a transit driver cannot. And those are also important reasons why students should be transported in yellow school buses. The big problems that we have with House Bill 2979 are two. The first is, but before I say that, I want to say, as I said earlier, I can appreciate the concerns of the lack of transit service in East County and Portland, and perhaps in other communities. I don't know about them. But our concerns deal with student transportation, which we believe is a separate issue from the intentions of the proponents of this bill. Because they are a captive audience and they move around in buses, I can see how you might think that you should put them in here. But because of the safety issues and other issues, we believe they should not be in here. So our first concern is that this bill creates a financial incentive for school districts such as Reynolds, David Douglas, and Centennial to drop their school bus service in favor of a waiver that allows them to provide bus passes to secondary students instead of transporting them, much as Portland does. We don't believe that's a necessary component to increasing transit service in East County, and we also think it's a bad move for our students. Our second problem with this bill, Representative Kenny Geyer indicated that the $20 million price tag of this bill was just a placeholder, that it wasn't an intentional number, but we would suggest that in a session where leadership is talking about cutting education, that $20 million needs to go into the state school fund. We can't afford it. Those are my two concerns. I'm happy to work in any work group or answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. We appreciate your willingness to join us.
Thank you.
Mr. Ochoa.
I'll go first, Mr. Oster.
I'm sorry. You're Mr. Oster. Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry. I had you in the wrong order.
Belinda is Ochoa.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Chair McCune and committee members. My name is Jonathan Oster. I'm the director of an organization based in Portland called OPAL, Environmental Justice Oregon. We're a civil rights and environmental justice organization. We work with communities across the metro region, building power for civil rights and environmental justice in the community, really asserting a right for greater self-determination. And transportation access and mobility is actually central to our view of self-determination and accessing human potential. We are known in the Portland region for running a transit program for riders. We essentially run a union for transit riders. And so through that, we engage with countless transit riders, predominantly in East Portland and East Multnomah County, because there's an increased concentration of transit-dependent communities in those areas, which is something that's happened really over the last 10, 15 years. And so that's where we focus a lot of our work. And as a result, we actually work with a lot of young people. So we have a strong youth component to our work, and we have supported and prioritized youth pass for at least the last 4 or 5 years, working with the Multnomah Youth Commission, working with Portland Public Schools, working with the city and with TriMet to maintain the program that we have post Betsy, but also trying to figure out ways to expand the program, because increasingly we have young people in East Portland and East Multnomah County that have a greater need, and as well as Washington County and Beaverton as well. There are a lot of schools that are really close. They're ripe for an expansion of not just a little bit more service, can unlock a whole lot of potential in terms of youth access to opportunity. And so that's kind of where we're focusing our efforts. Representative Kenny Geyer, I think, representing a central district where we do a lot of organizing, I think spoke to a lot of the environmental justice values and issues that we organize around. But I'll just add a few things. Youth Pass is not something unique to Oregon. Actually, we're behind the curve, frankly, in terms of the national trend. Communities in Boston, in San Francisco, in San Diego, they've all been pushing forward on Youth Pass programs that provide better access, better service, and subsidized fares for young people, because they understand that young people riding transit and having that freedom of mobility is actually key to economic prosperity and sustainability in their metro regions. They see it as a fundamental underpinning of that. So we're really following the footsteps of some very strong examples nationally. And in fact, in Boston, which is one of the oldest Youth Pass programs in the country, they actually just expanded it to include middle school students, which is the first program of the such in the country. And, respectfully, they have not found any safety concerns. In fact, the contrary, they found that actually public transit is quite safe for young people. And I think that some of the national studies have proven that point. There's a really seminal study out of UC Berkeley called Beyond the Yellow Bus. And it, really disproves a lot of the fear-mongering around safety concerns with respect to young people, particularly high school-aged people who are teenagers, who are very capable of riding public transit, and they found no safety concerns. And in fact, locally, we know that in Portland Public Schools, they've had a waiver for over 20 years, and there isn't a single incident on record of any safety issue associated with young people riding. So it just isn't borne out. There's really nothing to justify that. The jobs issue is very interesting, because increased demand and ridership also increases bus driver jobs and maintenance jobs and dispatcher jobs, and those are union jobs too. And in fact, in the Portland metro region, we're TriMet operates. It's the Amalgamated Transit Union that actually governs that union. And so it's different unions and different union jobs, but their jobs all the same, and they're there. And in fact, when we're talking about HB 2979, we're actually talking about a very small amount of jobs. It's only high school that we're focused on, which is the smallest percentage of yellow bus driver jobs. Most of the jobs driving yellow bus service happens at elementary levels and middle school levels, and we're not going there. We want to establish a really strong performance and track record at the high school level, which is the fewest number of jobs with regard to yellow bus service. And so, you know, we feel that this is a step in the right direction. I think some of my colleagues referenced this earlier, but, you know, we do have a transit operations funding crisis in the state. It can be characterized as nothing but a crisis, and there really isn't anything on the immediate horizon that's going to unlock that or solve that. And so establishing, this would be the first statewide youth pass program in the country. It would be very unique and very novel, and it can show how we can creatively find solutions to get at the transit operation needs in many districts across the state that we work with. And so I think this is a great opportunity for Oregon to, in fact, be a leader in terms of figuring out novel ways to both unlock the potential of youth ridership, develop that next generation of ridership, and without the global politics of a transportation funding package, still meaningfully move the dial when it comes to operations. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ochoa. Now I'm back on track.
Okay, so good afternoon. I'm a little nervous because it's the first time ever doing something
just
like this.
Fine. All we're right. Friendly crowd.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I would like to start off.
For the record, your name, please.
Oh, yes. My name is Belinda Ochoa.
Great. Thank you.
And I would like to thank the representative for the opposition as she brings safety concerns. Scoot it back.
Okay. Yeah, a little bit of distance keeps it from distorting. So.
All right.
Thanks.
I'm pretty loud, I think. So the opposition's concerns for safety, that is a very good points there. And I also, though, had been a bus driver here in Salem, Oregon, a bus rider, excuse me. And I've seen kids on the bus, and I see even when I was a teenager here in Salem, I knew my city bus drivers, and I always have trusted in my city bus driver that they knew how to take care of me, either as a youth or riding along, seeing youth on the bus. I'm sure that there'd be a pretty overall safety on the bus as well, in the sense that if even babies are allowed on there, then should there be a concern if high school students are not allowed, or there's too much of a concern of the safety? Go back to a little bit more. I am 35 here, single parent, live in South Salem. Born and raised here. I was born like right there, just down the street when the hospital used to be down there, like on Court or whatever. Wait, Center Street. and growing up here, it was really tough to get all the support for one to be able to enroll your full leadership capabilities, just any involvement in your community and things like that, just because I had a hard time kind of growing up in my area. And I now work with youth. As poor as I can be, I bought myself a Honda Pilot. It does have a little third row. And because I always seem to be the one not able to say no to other parents if they're like, hey, please take my kid, I can't get out of work, or hey, can you pick him up, or hey, this or that. And so I honestly, this is a little of a confession moment. I did get pulled over with two kids in a seatbelt because I thought you could double buckle. And so we're like, oh, safety concerns, you know, we'll squeeze you in. And when I got in trouble for that, I bought myself.
Miss Joyce didn't hear that. I'm just.
Come here. And so after that, that is when I invested in this expensive vehicle, also wasting tons of gas. When the gas prices were a bit higher, I spent about $400 a month just almost in favors, which I hope they pay me back someday, or I hope it pays out. But I believe it will pay out because I'm pretty sure not a lot of parents are able to support in this way, as I have asked for the favor, and I know it was limited. Everybody's working hard, two jobs at a time. And especially when I am working in the youth programs and we provide the after-school activities, I wish I could see every youth that wanted to participate there, but I don't see them there. And I really feel that we should make an investment in our next generation because they're the ones who are going to be paying my Social Security. No, just kidding. But
you're not the only one.
But I really want them to get every opportunity that they're interested in. So if they're interested in the after-school activities, if they're interested in getting a second job, I live in South Salem and I work in North Salem, and I have to go back south, get my daughter to take her to her Metro PCS job, and I'm just like, oh my God, I wish, you know, we had a little bit of spare money to invest in the monthly pass, but I would have to get two, and then it's like $80, and that's the gas that I need. So lastly, I really do believe in our youth, and I really feel that this opportunity can open many doors for them. And yes, not all youth are angels. Not all situations are perfect. But I think that with everything, luckily we have an awesome council and everybody in here and all the parents and support that we do to help things move along the best that we can and support where they need it. Sorry. And one more thing, it will also reduce that Boys and Girls Club, even all these pickups and things like that that they do. It could help with those transportation costs. So
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Questions for this panel? All right. Thank you so much for your testimony today. We have one other person.
Can I add just one more thing?
Certainly.
I drop off my daughter, too, at Sprague High School, and the line is all the way back down Kubler. And so if there was just some sort of city bus where those kids can just get on the bus, and I sometimes, like, I drop my other daughter off at Crossler, and that line comes, too, all the way down Liberty. And so I try to get them, like, half an hour early to school. My kids hate me for it. So they love you if you get the youth pass. Thank you.
Point very well taken, ma'am. Thank you so much. Mario Saldana? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this particular bill today? We have just this one other. Would you like to join us, sir? And if you could be quite succinct, we have one more bill we need to hear that's going to probably take another half hour, so we're kind of looking for a little. Three to 4 minutes would be great.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Mario Saldana, and I live in the north side of Salem. Mm-hmm. I attended McNary High School in Kaiser, and, you know, there's been times where I can't afford the city, like, you know, I can't afford the city bus because I have to stay after school for wrestling. I do wrestling. I'm in the JROTC program, and sometimes I even just take a test sometimes, and it makes it hard because, you know, sometimes I don't have the money. My dad works, but, you know, he comes home until 7, 8 in the afternoon, and my mom doesn't drive, so, you know, sometimes that's that little thing that I can't, keeps me from getting my grades back up or sports or what I like sometimes, and honestly, I really think it'd be a nice thing to have the city bus thing back.
Great. So have you participated in the city bus program in the past?
Yes.
And it's gone now.
Yeah.
Used to have it, and now you don't.
Yeah. Okay. The thing was I was in middle school, they had it, and now, well, sadly, they don't have it no more. But, you know.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming to tell us about it today. These are the things that we need to be hearing. Yes, sir. Welcome. And your name, please?
Hello, Honorable Chair, Vice Chair, and Honorable members of the committee. My name is Orlando Lopez, and I'm a resident of Woodburn. Mm-hmm. But I do volunteer at a youth group here in Salem, Latinos Unidos Siempre. Mm-hmm. And as she mentioned before, it's very difficult to see that a lot of our advisors have to go out into the city to pick up the youth and bring them back to wherever we are having our meeting. This is valuable time that we could be using to provide help with their homework or other activities that we can help them develop as leaders in the future, or today as well, obviously. And I am lucky to have my own vehicle, but it's not the latest model, so there's times where it does break down, and so I obviously need a way to get around, and I have to take the CARTS bus to get into the city of Salem and then get onto the Chariot bus. But I can only imagine for folks from Woodburn, like, want to come to Salem, especially college students that are going through Temecula, and it can be difficult as well. So I think something that we sometimes don't think about is for those youth that are also trying to take college courses when they're already in high school, and say the school buses aren't going to Jamaica and dropping them off there, and so we also have to take into account that they have to have access to higher education, but also maybe jobs that they might want to try to get while they're in high school as well. That's just my two cents.
Thank you very much for being here this afternoon. We've had one other addition. Heidi, is it? I'm going to guess. It's Gainan?
Ginnan.
Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Members of the
committee. The record, your name is?
My name is Heidi Ginnan.
Thank you.
I work with Upstream Public Health, and unfortunately our research manager couldn't be here today, but I'm going to speak to her work really briefly for you. I submitted some testimony. We at Upstream completed a report last year exploring the connections between health and chronic absenteeism. So Oregon has one of the worst rates of chronic absenteeism in the country. We are tied for third at a rate of 27%. And what that means is when we say that a student is chronically absent, that means that they miss 1 month or more of school during a school year. And at Upstream, this is very concerning to us as folks who work on kind of creating the social and physical and economic environments where Oregonians can thrive, because we know that educational opportunity and educational attainment has huge impacts on your lifelong health. And so this is the Youth Transit Initiative, House Bill 2979 and House Bill 2639 we support. We think that any barriers we can remove to children both accessing education and accessing those extracurricular activities as well are going to help improve the lifelong health outcomes for Oregonians. The more than one in five Oregon students miss a month of school every year, but this number goes up to more than one in three when we talk about students who are from low-income families, students of color, students who experience physical disabilities, and who attend special education classes. And so this is, as a group who's really concerned about reducing health disparities, this is a really important issue to us. So just wanted to highlight that testimony that we
Thank
sent,
you.
And I'm happy to send you the report if you're interested in diving into the other issues.
You're welcome to submit
Thanks
it if you
time.
Would like, and we do have your written testimony in OLIS,
yep.
I believe. So thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Us. And on that note, we will close the hearing on House Bill 2979 and open a hearing on House Bill 2639. I did misspeak a minute ago. We actually have three bills to go. Two, I think, will go very quickly, but we have one, I believe, where we have a number of people who would like to speak. So we will move to House Bill 2639 and open the testimony, I believe, Representative Lively. Thank you very much for
Your
joining us.
Just appeared.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. My name is John Lively. I'm representative from House District 12, which is Springfield. Before I talk just a few moments about this bill, I just want to talk a little bit about how I got here with this bill versus what the other conversations going on. So I've been working with LTD for some time on a bill, this bill in specific, but other issues around transportation for students, and especially to address problems with students getting to school that aren't able to, for all kinds of reasons, the schedule of the yellow school buses or have other issues. And so we were working on this some time before the transportation forum, which Representative McEwen and
yes.
Representative Gorsuch and others of us sat in and heard about this others. And so it wasn't a fact trying to compete. It was a fact that this was going. But one of the things I want to say about this bill, this is a pilot. So one of the reasons we suggested and we put the bill together the way we did was to do a pilot was to develop some statistics and information regarding this whole idea of youth transit passes that we can come back to the legislature and talk about. We've heard quite a bit of testimony today what the value would be, and I agree. I believe that is the value. But what we would do with this program in the LTD district is actually over the course of the 2 years track, and you'll see by the bill there's several different areas where we track and bring that information back so we'd have more definitive information to decide are the values that we're talking about really true. And I believe for a mere $2 million that it would be $2 million well invested, and we have a district in place. So I'm going to say a couple, three more things. So education today is very different than the educational model. You can go back a long ways, but especially when it comes to secondary education and what we expect our students to learn or be involved with today. And so in many cases, it's more than just attending school, and especially at the high school level. And so I can attest that in many cases in high schools, we have students that both take courses in high school that give them college credit, but also travel to colleges while they're in high school to take courses at the same time. So how do they get back and forth? In our case, it's LCC or the University of Oregon. Certainly the activities that occur outside of school in many cases are part of that experience. We want the children to be well-rounded and have all these experiences. And so in many cases, the activities that occur outside of schools and not just school activities are also important, and that's a real problem for a lot of youth, being able to attend those activities. excuse me, I don't know where it's going, my voice is, but it's disappearing quickly. So the activities, another area is job experience and job opportunities. And we know in many cases in high schools, we talk about the different opportunities for students. So in some cases, it's job shadowing, it's job opportunities that occur during the day, and they need some ability to get back and forth to take advantage of those. And that's another thing that this youth transit would offer, in addition to an actual job. I know students that are in high school that do work jobs and the ability to get back and forth. Not all students have the opportunity to have parents that have a car or own a car themselves. So I think there's a whole bunch of advantages and opportunities that we can learn from this that add to the educational experience that makes it kind of the full round and starts to address some of the issues we have with high school dropouts, the lack of the graduation rate in that, because we know a lot of these other things are just as important to the educational experience as it is going to college or to high school itself. So there's certainly some other people here that are going to talk about this, and I appreciate having worked with them on this specific bill. I just want to emphasize, again, two things. This bill addresses on a pilot basis, a two-year basis. We have some criteria in the bill in which we would measure to come back to the legislature to talk about the long term, because we believe there's a real opportunity throughout the state for this type of thing to complement what's going on in the school districts. And so we would appreciate consideration and work with you and the committee however we can to move this forward.
Thank you, Representative.
And I apologize for my voice. I don't
that
know
you're that. Doing just fine, and I think you've teed it up nicely. And I think from the testimony you've heard so far today that there are a lot of questions that I think we need to address regarding how our world is changing around student transportation. And this is just one other layer of the changes that we are seeing occurring. So thank you very much. I'd like to call up next, Erickson is the last name, and is it Rody, Roder?
Rodak.
Rodak. Oh, I'm sorry, look, I couldn't read the C. And Susan Hammond. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for letting me testify in front of you today, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. My name is Rodak Erickson. I live in Eugene, Oregon, and I've been a transit rider since I was 2 years old. The middle school I went to, I lived inside of the boundary that the yellow bus service wasn't available to me because I lived too close to the school. Because of that, I really needed public transit to get to school. I could have walked. I could have ridden my bike. One time when I rode my bike to school, I got hit by a car. So there's that little factoid, too.
That's not good. That is not
That's
good,
bad.
Mr. Erickson.
That's
sorry.
Bad luck.
Maybe the only time we
luck.
Laugh at someone getting hit. Yeah. By anyway.
We're glad you're here to tell the tale, because that's a very serious issue. So.
When I was in elementary school, we would receive the information about this bus pass program that's going to become available for sixth graders. And it was actually, a lot of my peers and I saw it as a rite of passage. Because once you got this little sticker on your ID card, that meant you could do anything and you could go anywhere you wanted to on your own terms, with your parents' permission, of course. And I benefited from this program from sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, and my freshman, sophomore year of high school when the program existed. And the program doesn't exist now, and we're hoping to bring it back. I also went to an alternative high school, and it was a charter school, so there was no yellow bus service provided at all. Even people with disabilities had to use city bus. Which was great the first 2 years that I was in high school and this program existed, because everyone could get to school for free. We took all of our field trips. 90% of our field trips were on city bus, unless we went somewhere that city bus didn't reach. The other thing, during my time in high school, I also did an internship, and my whole high school, during the month of January, all juniors and seniors were encouraged to do internships throughout the community. And of course, there's not going to be any yellow bus service or we've tried to ride source, but when there were 60 of us and we were all going all throughout the Eugene Springfield area, it wasn't possible to carpool. So we all relied on public transit to get us where we wanted to go. When the program was discontinued, my school decided that it would pay half the cost for the bus pass stickers. I think it's more than half. We, as students, were responsible for $25 a term to get the stickers, and the school would cover the rest. Some people couldn't afford that $25 a term, so the school would pay it all, which came out of the school's budget for teaching, which is what a school should be focused on, not having to get its students to school. My notes are horrible. I've kind of become really interested in transit from riding it so much. 2 years ago, I attended a summit in D.C. focused on transit and met Secretary of Transportation, former Secretary of Transportation. I also took advantage of the bus pass program when my mother was in the hospital. If you've ever been to Eugene Springfield, they moved the hospital out to the north end, the Riverbend hospital. I live in South Eugene. My father was already deceased, so the only way to get to see my mother in the hospital was to ride the bus to and from the hospital every couple of days. And that was really hard to do once we didn't have bus passes anymore and we had to wind up paying for them because she was the only working person. So we had to make do with that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And with your experience in Washington, D.C., we should invite you to sit up here with this panel. I don't know how many of us have had contact with the Surface Transportation Board at that level. So thank you so much for taking the time to come up today. We appreciate it. Let's see, we have Ms. Hammond. Am I saying that right?
You are. Thank you. Thank you, welcome. Representative McEwen and committee members. My name is Susan Hammond. I'm the Quality Improvement Coordinator for Oregon After School for Kids, the statewide after-school network. I work to support after-school programs all over Oregon. I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 2639. More than a decade of research confirms that quality after-school programs inspire and motivate children to learn, reduce the number of school absences, support children's social-emotional growth, and help raise their academic achievement. In Oregon, 131,779 school-aged children are alone and unsupervised during the hours after school. That's 22% of school-aged kids. Out-of-school time hours present challenges to families and communities as well as compromised youth who are already vulnerable. Cities and municipalities acknowledge that these same unsupervised hours could be spent in quality after-school or summer programs that would dramatically expand learning opportunities. We hope that you recognize that organized and intentionally designed non-school hour programs can not only help keep communities safe, but that they keep kids engaged in learning, which supports collaboration, problem solving, creative thinking, and help develop life skills and enrichment opportunities that they would otherwise not be able to access. The benefits of these highly impactful programs are lost when kids can't get to them or can't participate because they don't have a way to get home from them. In the 2011 Supporting Student Success Report, superintendents, principals, families, and providers identified transportation as a major barrier in supporting students in after-school programs, and it was described as almost non-existent for children in suburban and rural areas and children in special education. House Bill 2639 can address the problem of access to expanded learning opportunities. Please support House Bill 2639.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You bring a little bit different perspective than we've heard. We appreciate it very much. Any questions for this panel? Yes, Representative McLean.
Well, I really appreciate the fact that we have folks with a wide variety of experiences. And I wanted to, your name, sir?
My name is Rodek.
Okay. I just wanted to ask a question because it used to be not cool to ride a bus. And so I want to ask that question because has that attitude changed?
Sure, and Representative, I believe it has. I've met some of my closest friends. We've become friends because we've ridden the bus together so many times. That also, I want to mention that there was the previous bill that was heard, there was testimony about the drivers themselves. I've met some very nice drivers. There's many drivers in the district that are on first name basis. There are many drivers in the district that I see outside of. Mm-hmm. Ride in their buses every day. And
great.
Yeah.
Good.
Great. Thank you so much. Any further questions?
I don't have any other questions. Can I make one statement?
Yes.
I think it's important that we're all on the same team, and it's going to take all the city buses, and it's going to take all of the yellow buses to be able to do the job. And so we're all, you know, we're all here together. The city buses will never go all the places the yellow buses need to go or have to go or are required to go. And so I think it's important for us to realize that we have a yellow bus system and we have a urban system of transit or city buses or transit buses, and we need to figure out how to make us all successful to cover all of the transitions and all of the places. But I think this should be, we're all together, we're in this together, right? We should feel good about each other. We like yellow buses, we like transit buses, we like city buses, right? Okay. And we like it when students leave their house in the morning and show up to school on time and have great public instruction and then are able to get home safely. But the question is, what's the best way to do this in this day and age? So I think that's where the questions are going to start coming. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Two other people on this panel. We have Mr. McGlone and Andy Vobara. Am I close? Yes. Vobara, how about that, from Lane Transit District. Gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Chair McHugh and members of the committee, thank you so much. Edward McLone, I'm the government relations manager. And I was taught in my career as a lobbyist that the best thing to do is shut up and let real people talk. So I'm going to try to do that as best I can. Yesterday, I was called to testify. I did not get to speak at the dais, and the bill passed 7-0. So I'm hoping that today
this is precedent setting, yes.
And get a 5-2 vote out of
you. Right.
So I just wanted to take a moment to talk about a couple technical aspects of the bill. I'll pass it over to Andy, who's the certified smart person here, and let him wow you with his brilliance. So I agree with Representative McLean's comments, as is our general manager, that we all need to be working together. We do not see a role for LTD to supplant yellow bus service. We think that these are two services that need to work together in collaboration. Our general manager has been at an agency where they were the only transportation and had to transport students via public transit, and it didn't work. It was really troublesome. And so we see this as part of an addition to the system as a whole that make it possible for students to get to school, to their other commitments, and ultimately thrive. To that end, our bill does not take money out of the state school fund or allow school. It doesn't do any of the touching of that 70, 80, or 90% that Tricia talked about as far as the state school fund and student transportation reimbursement dollars. Representative Hack, I think you were getting at that a little bit at the previous panel. And so we're not in that realm. We're a general fund appropriation. Additionally, we leave the waiver process alone as it is. 4J and Eugene currently has a waiver. All the other school districts in our service area would be required to continue providing yellow bus transportation, which is a recognition of the kind of challenge of this interplay here. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and hightail it out of here with my comments. I'll be here to answer questions if you need anything. I'll hand it over to Andy to take it away.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. My name is Andy Vobara. I'm the Customer Services and Planning Director at Lane Transit District, and I'd like to speak on behalf of House Bill 2639. I really think the reason Edward brought me is that why we have the same haircut, that I've worked at LTD more years than he's been alive. So brought me along as a historian. But you've heard a lot of great testimony today about the benefits of these types of programs in terms of the flexibility that it really gives students to access life in a lot of different ways. I'd like to spend just a second talking about the history of our program and then kind of reinforce a couple of those community benefits. We worked with the Department of Energy in the early 2000s to develop the pilot program that was funded by Betsy, and we were very excited about that. It leveraged the group bus pass program that we've had in place in Eugene Springfield, starting with the University of Oregon back in 1988. So we were excited to bring it to the middle school and high school age group and see what we could do there. It was available to about 25,000 students at that time. Today that number would be more around 21,000. Thankfully, all 25,000 did not choose to ride the bus. That would have been a problem with capacity. But what we did see was about 7,000 boardings a day by middle school and high school students. And to put that into context, on a normal school day, we would have probably between 40 and 45,000 total boardings. So represented a big chunk of our ridership during that time. Again, the program was cut in 2011, and we didn't have the funds just to offer that to the youth because of the hole that would have left in our operating budget. What we did did see was a drop in ridership. How much of that was youth and all the other things going on with the recession, it's hard to probably tease out. But there have been a handful of programs. Rodek talked about some of the alternative high schools that did choose to figure out a way to make it work, but a very small number are able to participate in that. The other exciting program that we were able to participate in was working with Hamline Middle School in Springfield. The principal came to us with this very issue of truancy and poor performance in the school. They have 93% free and reduced lunch students, so it's the poorest middle school in Springfield. And so we got to do a little research project with them. What we saw again was with many of the students that live within that walking distance that didn't have yellow school bus, having the access to the transit bus allowed them to get to school. And so we saw 100% increase in ridership to the stops around that school. So that was very encouraging. And I think that the feature of this proposal being a pilot project would just allow us to really flesh that out on a more region-wide basis and really give you some better data on how effective these kind of programs can be. So talking again about the community benefits, you've heard a lot of them. I don't need to spend a lot of time on that, but we believe that everyone deserves the independence to achieve their goals, whether that's somebody that can't drive or chooses not to drive and or doesn't have the ability to drive. So students certainly fall into that category and don't have the access to get to these jobs and extracurricular activities.
Sir, I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment. I believe that Representative Gorsuch needs to leave.
I think you have to.
You need to move to suspend the rules.
I think you have to recess this hearing.
Would you mind if we take we're going to stand down for just 1 second and deal with another issue that's time sensitive, if you don't mind. So we will go into recess on House Bill 2639 and go back into session and on.
I could walk you through the motion, Madam
Please.
Chair. So the motion for this that we're about to try is a motion to suspend the rules for purposes of allowing Representative Gorsuch to vote on the two bills that he missed, which are 2389 and 2658. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Gorsuch to vote on House Bill 2389 and House Bill 2658.
On Vice Chair Davis's motion, do I hear any objection? Then the motion to suspend the rules will pass. And Vice Chair Davis?
I think we just ask him how he wants to vote.
Do we have? Oh, is that all we have?
On each one. So,
All right.
So, I guess there's no reason I couldn't do that. So, why don't you ask him how he'd vote on each one? That'd be the easiest way.
Vice Chair Gorsuch, how do you vote on House Bill 2389?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Gorsuch, how do you vote on House Bill 2658?
Yes.
Yes. Duly noted.
Perfect.
Is that all we need to do,
Absolutely.
Mr. Brennan?
All right. Then we can make it all work from there, Madam.
Then we will once again close the sessions.
Sorry.
The work session on House Bill 2389 and the work session on House Bill 2658. Thank you for bringing that to my attention, Vice Chair Davis. Safe travels, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you.
And we will reopen the hearing on House Bill 2639. Thank you. I'm sorry about that. We wanted to get him on record before he had to take off.
It's like it never happened.
Yeah. Just start where you left off.
Okay. Well, you've heard a lot of the positive benefits that the student transit pass allows, where a student, maybe can't catch the yellow school bus if they want to participate in extracurricular activities. I took a lot of the calls from parents when this program ended saying, I really need this. And here's some examples of the burden that it really caused. And some of those were pretty heart-wrenching. One of the stories that we heard about was students who wanted to stay after school for tutoring who couldn't do that and then, ended up failing a class. So, I mean, again, it's not just for, going to football practice or going to a job. It's really educational related as well. And so I think it does really reinforce all the great opportunities that kids have to take advantage of in this system. So what we've done, again, to try to serve the students, we've lowered our prices. We've charged only half fare for students, but that's still a burden, as you heard earlier testimony. Single parents couple of kids, $25 a month per child in that age range, that can really bite into their budget. So that just doesn't work for everybody. And so we've heard that from a lot of the parents who would like to see this come back as well as part of their program. So what we're here to ask for you from you is your support. We're unable to meet the needs of our community, and we think that this is just a great opportunity, again, to put this in place, to get you some data to make some of those longer-term decisions, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Chair. Great. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate both of you coming up to Salem to testify on this bill. Do we have questions for this panel?
Thank you.
Anything else you'd like to add, Representative Lively?
No, I just appreciate working with them, and for those that did come up and testify, and look forward to conversations around this.
Great. Thank you. I will close the hearing on House Bill 2639, unless there's anyone else in the audience that would like to step forward and testify on this bill. All right. Then we will close the hearing. I think you can see from the testimony you've heard for the last hour, and there are a couple of other bills out there looming around that are addressing this issue. We have something that we need to sit down and have a conversation about as the world changes and how we define student transportation. What is the best way to get kids from home to school? How do you deal with issues of after-school activities in a reasonable way that's cost-effective and uses our tax dollars very, very wisely, because we all know they're very constrained when it comes to public education. So we will be forming a work group to address these issues, and you'll be hearing more about that as this session unfolds. So thank you all for your interest in this very important issue. And on that note, I will move along to open a hearing on House Joint Memorial 5, Build America Bonds, and I think we have Representative Reed here to testify. Thank you so much for being here. We're delighted to have you back in our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Was it something I said?
I think it was. Yeah, it must have been. Something about Build America Bonds. I don't know what that's about.
I'm upset about that. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for hearing the bill. It's a bit of a reunion. It's a little strange for me to be sitting here. I miss you all.
Oh, well, we miss you as well. We will put that on record.
Thank you. I want to help you. I expect you will support this memorial as I do, and I want to explain why I think it's so important. I obviously don't need to explain to you how important infrastructure is, particularly transportation. However, in case you've forgotten, a couple of studies that I always like to cite. On the West Coast alone, the gap in infrastructure, which is more broadly than just transportation, is $1 trillion over the next 30 years. And in the Portland area alone, it's $20 billion by 2035. It doesn't represent the whole state, but those are two numbers that always stick in my mind. So I wanted to remind you of that. And of course, you know that the challenges associated with infrastructure, since they are things we take for granted, they're things that are not as immediate in our daily lives as a lot of the other things we deal with, class sizes and human services and all that. But there are reasons to be optimistic. There are some great programs out there. And if you haven't encountered the Build America Bond program, I encourage you to check it out. This memorial really just encourages the federal government to reauthorize that program or something like it. It had tremendous success during its short life between April 2009 and the end of the year 2010, and helped unlock a whole lot of capacity. And the way it works is really by helping to reduce the cost of issuing bonds for states and municipalities. Over that short period of time, it helped finance almost $190 billion of public works projects around the country. The way it does it is essentially two things. There, of course, are two main types of bonds available to public issuers. The most common is the tax-exempt bond, which gets lower rates because investors don't get taxed on the earnings. But these tax credit or direct payment bonds offer those savings up front instead, either to the investor in the form of tax credits or to the issuer in the form of a direct subsidy. The earnings on the bonds are taxable, so the issuer can offer them to a much broader market that goes beyond just the folks who are interested in tax-exempt bonds, and that means that we're going to get better rates. In fact, one estimate has that short-lived program shaved almost 100 basis points off the average interest rate across that $190 billion. Of course, doesn't sound like a whole lot, but on $190 billion and over time, that turns out to be a really significant change, which stretches taxpayer dollars and lets us do a lot more. So I think that's a program that can make a big difference for Oregon and for the rest of the country. Has implications not just for roads, but K-12 facilities and all kinds of infrastructure. So the message, I think, is really clear. It's supported by people across the country, across the political spectrum, and that's why I'm asking for your support to this for this memorial, which would send a clear message to Congress that we'd like them to reauthorize Build America bonds or something very much like it. And there's another version known as America Fast Forward Bonds, which is also mentioned. Our original memorial, as introduced, needs a little amendment to fix some dates and a little bit more specifics. Those dash two amendments would do that. I'm happy to have any questions that might occur to you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Davis has a question for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much, Representative Reed, for being back. It's like the band's back together.
Thanks.
Exciting. Do you know if these bonds were utilized in Oregon and for what projects they may have been utilized for?
I don't have specific projects in mind. Senator Wyden was a large force in helping make this possible, and if you've been anywhere near him since then, you've probably heard him talk about it, as I have. So I would be very surprised if there were not projects in Oregon, but unfortunately I don't have a specific list, but I'd be glad to research that and get back to you.
Thanks.
And
Representative Reed, during that particular time frame that you mentioned, I happened to be a commissioner for the Port of Coos Bay and was back in Washington, D.C. a number of times lobbying for infrastructure projects. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times Senator Wyden came up to me, and the first thing he would say is, build America bonds, build America bonds. And he took this very seriously. He did a fine job of representing that program that became very successful in its own right. Unfortunately, we didn't find ourselves in a position to take advantage of them at that particular point in time, but I know for a number of other projects that they've been just really key in helping municipalities keep those costs down. So it's a wonderful program. And I look forward to supporting this.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I don't. I know we probably all have our own reasons to lack some confidence in Congress, but I think this is a place where we could have a strong vote from Oregon and encourage Congress to come together on something like this.
I think this project has demonstrated itself to be a winner, and we will hope we can encourage them to reinstate it. So thank you for your effort.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Anyone else want to talk about Build America? Oh, we do. There, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't see the list. We do have three people, and I'll just call you all three up at once. Courtney Johnson, Kate Newhall, and Jerry Henderson. Thank you for being here. You're welcome to stay, Representative Reed. Thank you. We were enjoying your presence here, so don't rush off.
Okay. Got a seat right here.
You're welcome to join us if you'd like. Okay.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall, and I'm here today representing the Sheet Metal Contractors Association, the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association, Sheet Metal Workers Local 16, the State Association of Electrical Workers, and UA290 Plumbers and Steam Fitters. We're all supportive of HJM5 and urging Congress to reauthorize the Build America bonds. I think Representative Reed did a phenomenal job of kind of describing the program and what it is. I think this is a very important program to getting critical infrastructure development projects happening, both in local governments and state government. I think it also is a program that enables us to not only invest in that critical infrastructure that is essential to economic development, but it's also a job creator. So we urge you to support House Joint Memorial 5 and send a message to Congress to reinstate this really important program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman McEwen and the committee. I'm Jerry Henderson with the Sheet Metal Contractors Association. I'm here to testify in favor of HJM5. It was just down the hall remarkably testifying about apprenticeship ratios a little bit ago and the need to try and increase that ratio. And, of course, the key to that is more jobs. Obviously, if we can have more infrastructure projects, that'll help across the board. this is one more tool in the toolbox for financing those projects, and it's hard to not be in favor of something that causes those projects to be financed at the most reasonable level of interest. Reduces the expenses to the state of Oregon and provides opportunities that we may not get for cheaper rates anywhere else. So we hope that you'll also support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being here today. Ms. Johnston.
Chairman McEwen, members of the committee, for the record, Courtney Johnston, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council, which represents approximately 25,000 members, construction workers in 21 member unions that are highly skilled in a wide array of crafts. Additionally, I'm also here on a number of other groups. I'm going to list off now the National Electrical Contractor Association, the Associated Wall and Ceiling Contractors, IBEW Local 280, the Laborers Local 320, Iron Workers Local 29, and Brick and Allied Crafts Local 1. On behalf of all of those people, I'm here today to support House Joint Memorial 5 and to join Representative Reed and my colleagues here in urging Congress to reauthorize the Build America bonds. I don't think I need to go into what they've all discussed and the benefits of infrastructure investments have to both public and private productivity and growth. But I do want to say that I think these investments work best when they're done efficiently and strategically, and that's what these bonds allow for. The projects funded by these bonds help our members provide important training opportunities, as he mentioned, in apprenticeship, as well as sustaining their family health insurance and keeping our members' defined benefit pension plans solvent while supporting their families. And these men and women are an intricate part of Oregon's workforce and our region's economy and our future economic prosperity. And so for those reasons, on behalf of all of the people I named earlier, I'm here today to support the use of strategic funding mechanisms to invest in our future.
Great. Thank you so much for your testimony. Questions? Comments?
Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you very much. And on that note, I will close the hearing on House Joint Memorial 5. And we will open a hearing on House Bill 2259 and call up Mr. Russell and Mr. Campbell. Thank you, Representative Reed.
Thank you.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. And I will do the elevator speech, and then you can ask questions because I don't want to stand between you and the door. You've been here for
a
long time.
You have 6 minutes.
This bill has two technical fixes for the trucking industry. And basically what it does is it makes state law consistent with ODOT's long-standing practices. So there really isn't a huge change going on here. The first part, for those of you that were here in February of 2014, you've already seen it. It has to do with self-loading log trucks. And the Department of Transportation used to issue two permits to self-loading log trucks. One, to give them a little additional weight because of the little crane that sits behind the cab that loads the logs onto the truck. And the second one, to allow them to go over 80,000 pounds. What Section 1 does is it combines those two permits into one. So they only have to get one permit, and it takes care of the whole shebang, and we're good to go. The second part of this bill has to do with a single-trip permit holders. And single-trip permit holders are folks that are hauling big machinery and stuff like that that's over 98,000 pounds. And sometimes it goes as high as a million pounds. So they're very big things. Those folks are subject to a different type of tax. It's called the road use assessment fee. And it's based on the actual loading of each of the axles. It's a fairly complicated tax. But what this bill does is it says that if one of those folks that's paying the road use assessment fee pays the gas tax, or in this case the diesel tax, inadvertently or for whatever reason, and then they can get a refund of that tax because they're only paying their tax under the road use assessment fee. That's consistent with the rest of the truck taxation system. We don't pay the fuel tax, we have the weight mile tax and all that stuff. So that's the elevator speech. I think Aaliyah is in the back of the room from the Department of Transportation, and her job is to go like this.
She didn't sign up, so.
Oh, okay.
Her name's not on the list, so.
So there's no opposition to the bill, and I'll turn it over to Kevin.
Mr. Campbell.
Chair McKeown, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Associated Oregon Loggers, and I'm joining Mr. Russell in supporting House Bill 2259. And after that comprehensive testimony that I've just provided, I did want to quote, again, Representative McLean, who so aptly said earlier that we need each other. The city buses, the yellow buses, and I want to add the self-loading log trucks. The bill does not require, however, a general fund contribution, so I think we may be welcome to the party. That's but with awesome. That, thank you so much for getting us in. I know it's been a very full day for the committee, and I appreciate your consideration of House Bill 2259.
This is a perfect way to wrap up our day. We couldn't be more delighted. Any questions for this panel?
I have a number of questions.
Yeah.
We need a tutorial on self-loading.
Do we have an issue? Do we have committee with going until 6 tonight?
You'll be by yourself.
Screen down,
like.
And we could bring in video. I think we ought to have a demonstration.
I would like to see.
Yeah. Maybe you could wait till the bill's on the floor to ask.
Oh, have a demonstration, yes.
Bring in the demonstration.
Chair McKeown, I did bring written comments, and so I could.
You did. I think we're doing fine, Mr. Campbell. Thank you. Thank you so much for being
thank
here. I will
much.
Look to ODOT for a nod. Did you want to say anything today? All right. All right, thank you so much. Then I'm going to close the hearing on, I've lost track, 2259. And we are, look at that, 2 minutes early. Anything for the good of the order this afternoon?
Well, I felt like I had to have a kumbaya moment because it felt like we needed to have a little, you know, feel good moment.
And we will have more, I promise. More, I promise.
Moment.
And we will have more.